The MENA Talks, a podcast series by the BIC on the Middle East and North Africa. Once a month, our hosts, along with special guests, will explore underlying historical, economic, social, and political drivers behind today's systemic issues in the MENA region. The BIC is present on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Follow us and subscribe to receive our latest news and publications.
Dear listeners, we would like to issue a quick disclaimer. We've had some issues while recording this podcast and could unfortunately not ensure the best audio. However, the exchange remains largely listenable and we highly recommend that you listen to it. It is an important conversation. This is a one-time issue and we will make sure to prevent this from happening again in the future. Thanks for bearing with us.
Welcome, everyone, in a new episode of MENA Talks, conversations around the MENA region. My name is Yasmina Karimi. I am a North Africa research analyst at the Brussels International Centre. And we're welcoming today my guest, Hayat Bousselmi, the Danish Refugee Council Tunisia representative and regional program advisor. Hayat Bousselmi is also a former UNHCR staff member and former diplomat. Welcome, Hayat. Thank you for accepting my invitation. It is truly an honor to have you today.
Hi, Yasmin. A pleasure. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you. We're going to discuss a lot of things today. We're going to talk about migration, mainly mixed migration, which is something the DRC, the Danish Refugee Council, works on, and you personally has extensive experience on. We're going to talk about Tunisia more particularly, but also the larger region of the Maghreb and maybe North Africa, and the current and future trends regarding mixed migration. I want to start with a first question. I looked at the most recent report by the DRC regarding the increase, the continuous annual increase of departures from North Africa. So migration from North Africa through all three routes, so the central, western, Mediterranean routes and the Atlantic route. How do you explain that continuous annual increase across the region, really?
Thank you, Yasmin. I mean, the reasons are known to everybody. I think it's basically mainly because of the dire economic situation in the countries of origin. So people who are departing from these countries are looking at Europe as the exit, as the right place to be and to establish their lives in a way to maintain their dignity somehow. So they're looking mainly for economic opportunities. But we also know that mixed migration movements are characterized by this mixture between migrants per se, I mean, people who are just leaving their countries for economic reasons or others, but also asylum seekers and refugees who are fleeing persecution from their countries of origin. Basically it's that major factor that pushed these people to leave their countries and to look for a better life, as simply put.
And we also see an increase, unfortunately, in the number of people who are reported dead or missing. But we're gonna you know, include that in our conversation later on. There's a saying, Europe pays, and North African countries, and more specifically here in our conversation, Tunisia detains, meaning that Europe has many programs and incentives, either through bilateral agreements, and in the case of Tunisia, I think the most prominent example is with Italy, or through the EU as a body, to deter migration and, you know, be kind of the gatekeeper to Europe. Do you think that anything changed since the latest political developments following the 25th of July decisions, especially with the country in urgent need of development funds? Do you think that trend changed, and do you think it will change or remain the same in the future?
I'm not sure we should pose it this way. One entity or one party pays and the other is implementing something in order to get that kind of that amount of money or something. I think it's about agreements between countries. But let me tell you something. I think what is missing in the humanitarian arena in general versus the political arena is the way we perceive things. So the moment we will be able to understand the rationale behind each entity's thinking and programming and the factors that determine policies and actions on the ground, then we will be able to address the migration phenomena in a better way. I think it's very legitimate if I try personally to put myself in the shoes of states or governments, it's legitimate to have security concerns, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's the job of the countries actually themselves, according to international law and their obligations and international law, to protect foreigners of their territories and to preserve the right for migration and for mobility, which is a universal right. So I think it's something beyond the situation of receiving money and doing something when you get that money. Look, for us as DRC, as a humanitarian, independent humanitarian international non-governmental organization, our job is to follow up on the political developments and to see how they affect, I mean, part of our job, of course, how they affect migration trends, how they affect the protection of people in need, the vulnerable people, be it migrants or refugees or asylum seekers or IDPs in another context. So I wouldn't put emphasis on a particular historic date in terms of political developments in one country, for instance, Tunisia. But I would just say that the cooperation between the EU and Tunisia has been ongoing for long, as we can see it. Then each country in the whole region is having those security concerns because of the big influx of people coming in and out. But can we better manage this influx? Can we better manage mixed migration movements? Yes, we can, of course. And we can through maybe making mobility a real right for any individual, any human being, but also put the right maybe policies to make it beneficial to everybody, to hosting countries, because everybody knows that migration could be a development factor. And the examples throughout the world are so numerous. You know, several refugees, several migrants have contributed substantially to the development of the hosting countries, and they became or not citizens of those hosting countries. So what I'm trying to say here is that I don't see it this way. One pays, the other implements. And I don't think it's the case anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your perspective is really interesting. Thank you. Then that leads to my next question. You know, the more migrants, in both in number and in length, the more migrants are detained, the worse their conditions. And I feel that the bigger the incentives for them to make risky trips, as every human being would, you know, take that reasonable, logical decision. Is detaining migrants not a counterproductive strategy to deter migration overall to Europe or to other places, but we're talking from North Africa to Europe at the moment. Why do you think states in from both sides of the Mediterranean, why do you think they're still relying so much on detention?
I think it's the same security concerns. I think that there is a panic each time there is a big influx of people reaching out Europe or reaching out other regions of the world. And it's mainly because there was never a holistic approach of how to allow for a regular migration as it is enshrined in the international covenants, the related international covenants, and as a basic human right, actually. So governments from the job that they do, which is preserving their borders, preserving the safety of their citizens, preserving the integrity of their territory, I think they do that. They tend to focus on that aspect. They see migrants as a threat, which is not the case. And when you try to cooperate bilaterally, regionally, globally, to put the right mechanisms to absorb the number of migrants in different countries and to implement the principle of solidarity, That is so super important as well. And to understand each other and to have trust when you negotiate, when you try to put policies, and to maybe really follow a participatory approach through involving humanitarian actors such as NGOs, local NGOs, national ones, or international NGOs, civil society in general. So when you do that, I think you can reach much better results. But again, detention, yes, I mean, it exists. It's counterproductive, of course, but we shouldn't reach that point in detaining people for just trying to attempt to have a better life and trying to just benefit from their right to move from a place to another. Mm-hmm. So we go back again to the fact that if it was, organized according to specific policies and laws and agreements, fair agreements between countries, then things will work smoothly, I think.
Mm. I completely agree, Ayaz. And, let's talk a bit about alternative solutions, humanitarian solutions. What, in your opinion, are the kind of programs that or solutions that can be implemented to assist migrants and refugees? And of course, what is the DRC's role in assistance in the region and Tunisia in particular?
To start with, I think one principle which is super important, the principle of non-refoulement, this should be respected by any country, by any destination country, let's say. Because if we don't respect it, that means that people who are fearing death, who are fearing for their lives when they flee their countries for because there is a war, there is a crisis, there is an individual persecution, one of the bases of needing international protection as refugees or asylum seekers, then there is a complete breach of international law and national law requirements. And you put these people lives in danger, in clear danger, when you tell them, go back to where you came from, for instance, or you detain them and then you forcibly return them to their countries of origin. While those countries are considered as being not safe. And this is another maybe whole debate about how to consider a country a safe place or not. We can talk about it for long as well. So I think to start with, I think the respect of the principle of non-refoulement is crucial in this regard. And then you cannot just try to have a purely security approach to this phenomenon of mixed migration and try to do interception or rescue at sea, which is great because many actors, not only government and state actors, are trying to rescue people at high seas or near the coast of the countries, the hosting countries, but also fishermen and other actors are trying to do that. So rescue at sea is super important as well. But we understand that this is happening once the origin of problem is there. So you should start by what is causing the phenomena, what is causing mixed migration. We should understand that migration is a right. People have the right to move from a place to another. How we can do it in a decent manner for those people, but in a manner that is acceptable somehow between countries. And we know that this is how international law works. I mean, it's agreements between countries. So you have to start with also programs in the hosting countries, countries of transit, countries of destination countries, and try to allow for a dignified life for youth and other people who are trying to find that better life in other places. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying here that for humanitarian actors, it's their job to impede such a journey. I'm talking about the migration journey, not the dangerous ones, migration journey in general, to impede it and to let people stay in their countries of origin. It is not an objective per se. It should be the objective for humanitarian actors in collaboration with state actors, in collaboration with other civil society entities, is to contribute to making the whole socio-economic context in a particular country favorable for those who are trying to just have a decent life. I mean, it's not a big dream to just have a decent life, right? It's just the basic. We are working with having jobs. We try to have some, a house where to live, how to pay bills. And these people are trying to do that. They cannot do that in their countries of origin, or they don't want to do that, because let's also be realistic. When you see the profiles of the mixed migration movements, people, they are not only youth between 15 to 35 years old only. They are adults, they are heads of family, they are single women. And this is scary. And I'll tell you something about Indonesia, for instance. I think it's almost the same in other countries, maybe in Africa and in other places also in the globe. Mm-hmm. Families are now inciting their kids, their children, to go through those perilous journey, and they are financing them. I'm not saying it's a general fact. I'm saying it exists. So some of the families are not afraid anymore of that. And that shows the level of despair and lack of faith and lack of clarity regarding the future. So this is worrying. And again, it's not only humanitarian actors, not only development actors, it's not only the state actors. It's everybody having, again, a holistic. I know this sounds like we heard it before, but it's true. I mean, everybody should work together and to say, look, we have to make it better here. We have to ensure that that right for mobility is respected. We have to make sure that once these people reach another country, they are treated well, they are received well, and also that there are policies to absorb a number or something like that of these people and try to find, you know, ways of integration or ways of cooperation or ways to even like the forced return of these people to their countries of origin. It should be done in a very decent manner, because I know too well from our experience that these forcibly returned people are going through a real trauma, you know. Mm-hmm. So not only they risk their lives through taking those, you know, death boats, like we some people call it, but then they go through the shame of being back to their countries without doing anything. Hmm. So let's also try to be in their shoes again, no matter if that was irregular or illegal or not. And that's another whole debate about what term to use and what are these concepts of irregular migration or not illegal migration and else. So it's really a roller coaster. It's really made painful for these people to live, like in any place, be it in their countries or in the country that they are seeking to reach later. Mm. So yeah,
it definitely is painful. So how do you foresee the future of mixed migration across the region? Do you, especially, you know, with some very worrying phenomena we have, you know, the increased popularity of right-wing political parties and figures in the global West, and you know, continuous political instability in the global South. Do you think we're going to see more of these forced returns and anti-immigrant narratives? Do you think this is something that's going to worsen, or, you know, can we hope for a better future?
I think the number will be increasing, and it is increasing, actually, as you mentioned. I mean, the last quarterly update for the Mixed Migration Center, which is an independent institution, but which is linked to the Danish Refugee Council. In the quarter three update, there was an increase in the land and sea arrivals to Italy and Spain from North Africa through the central Mediterranean route and Western Mediterranean route. The increase is by 32% compared to the same period in 2020, which means between July and September of the same period. And you mentioned also, Yasmin, the number of deaths, which is very worrying. It's increasing as well. 526 refugees and migrants were reported dead or missing, and Tunisians, Tunisians are still representing the top nationality that is arriving in Italy through the central Mediterranean route. So between July and September 2021, they represent 28% of arrivals in Italy. And when you do the math, it's not, you know, you don't have to be genius to understand that, you know, when you don't have means to provide for yourself and your family and to have a decent life, you look elsewhere, right? You look elsewhere beyond your town, beyond your city, or you look elsewhere beyond your country. And this is why I'm saying it's a legitimate right for people to migrate, to seek better opportunities. But then how we see migration and how we manage it, that's another issue, and I think it's part of a problem at the same time. So worsening the trend, I think, yes, because after the COVID, after many developments in the region, things are not that stable. The perspectives of a better life should be there for people to know that when you compare the perilous journey and going through a literally death journey to the fact that you can have some real opportunities in your country, I think people would choose the right choice, logically speaking, and then it depends on people, of course, to stay and to try to establish your business or to have a decent work. So as long as those root causes of the movement, of the mixed migration movement, are not addressed. And this, I think, requires a clear strategy between not only the traditional humanitarian actors and the state actors, but also the development agencies and organizations. They should be involved from the very beginning. And I think there is an effort. I mean, let's not have a blind eye on what is happening. I think there is a huge number of projects aiming at making people have any decent lives in their countries. I don't want to name some organizations or agencies. I think, to be fair, when many humanitarian actors and development actors are doing their job at trying to find real opportunities for people, be it migrants in other countries or the citizens, youth. I mean, I'll tell you about what DRC, the Danish Refugee Council in Tunisia, is doing right now. We have a pilot project and we called it ACREM. It's Accelerated Creation for Employment in Medellin. Medellin is one of the governorates of the southeast of the country. It's a very ambitious project which is aiming at creating rapidly and expeditiously job opportunities in two levels. One is to enable youth between the age of 18 and 35 to initiate their own businesses, to train them on business canvas and the business plans, and to allow them with some small grants to literally launch their businesses. And the other one is job placement. So it's not a huge number, but still it's super important because Medellin, for instance, is one of the governorates which is impacted the most by unemployment in the country. So we do that because we believe that it's part of finding solutions to the big problem. It's part of ensuring a better social cohesion in a country which is hosting migrants and refugees and asylum seekers, and it's part of ensuring that you know there is no tension between the local communities and the migrant communities. When the local community active population is finding jobs and decent jobs, then there is, you know, more chances that they will accept and embrace migrants in their territory in general.
Yeah, definitely. And we see that migrants in general are the first to be blamed when there's a shortage in jobs and when unemployment rates increase. So indeed, development programs, I think, are key, and maybe perhaps reviewing the development paradigms that we developed across the years in our countries is also key. But yeah, no, very, very interesting. And I wish you the very best of luck. We're coming to an end to this podcast. Thank you a lot, Hayat Bouselmi, again, DRC Tunisia representative and regional program advisor. It was a truly great conversation.
Thank you very much, Yasmin. It was an absolute pleasure. Great MENA podcast. Thank you so much.
For all of the people listening to us, make sure to catch up with us in our next episode. See you very soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the MENA Talks. Share your thoughts with us on social media with the hashtag #MENAtalks and follow us to receive our latest news and updates. The MENA Talks is a podcast series on the Middle East and North Africa, an initiative of the Brussels International Centre.